$5 Bin Podcast with Mark and Rick.
And now with a splash of Brian.
Hello, Cinemaniacs, and welcome to the $5 Bin Podcast. This is one of our mini episodes. I'm your host, Mark Dittleman, and with me are my co-host, Rick Maxian.
Hello.
Hello, Rick and Brian Higgins.
Uh-huh.
Salutations.
Good day.
Good day, gentlemen. Good evening. How are we doing?
That's true.
How are we doing on this fine evening?
Warm.
We got some heat in the movie kit.
Oh, that's
right. I like that I just did the spoken word.
Yeah, the heat is on.
I did the William Shatner.
Is there a movie reference where the heat is on played in some movie?
The heat is on.
Is that like the theme song? I feel like it would be in some, like an Eddie Murphy movie.
We should do a mini for our mini and figure that out next time.
Like a mini?
Yeah, well, to figure out the heat is on, we'll do a mini for the mini.
This feels like we're just going down the rabbit hole a little bit.
We could just mini our way down to everything.
Just mini our way till we get back to square one.
How does that even happen?
I don't know.
All right. I'm in.
It's confusing.
All right. So, Brian, take note.
Take a look at me.
I'm already looking it up.
Okay. Oh, nice.
What else is confusing is the movie we just did a full review of this past week. The Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai Across the Eighth Dimension.
Not the second one.
Now, gentlemen, this was a very all-over-the-place movie, and I know we had very mixed emotions. I want to start with Brian, because I know, Brian, your opinion at the time was not fully formed, and it was in your mind as, you know, a movie that, depending on the day, probably would have influenced what you thought of this movie. But have you thought about it anymore, and have you garnered any further opinion since then?
I've vaguely thought about it more, and I still have no idea how.
Okay, well, that's
it.
Good. Maybe we can get into that a little bit more. And how about you, Rick?
There's no other opinions. It was a fine movie.
Yeah.
I mean, I remembered it a little bit. I think I let all the campiness kind of go away. I didn't take any offense to it anymore.
Right. Yeah.
It's like, even with the,
you don't remember
effects,
it as much. It kind of fades away as you think about it.
Oh, like, God, but think of the parachute.
That's bad effects. That's
especially when the guy's hair is completely different.
Yeah.
It's like, this is a totally different guy.
I forgot about that till this moment.
So one of the weird things is, I couldn't stop thinking about this movie. And I kind of,
well, because I
weird.
Sent you.
No,
for your,
I really like
it was
on my mind.
It was your birthday,
week.
And I sent you a picture of Jeff Goldblum.
You did, without his shirt on. You said happy birthday from New Jersey Goldblum. So it's actually funny because I was in a meeting this week and someone was like, "Hey, do you remember this line?" And they said, "Laugh while you can, monkey boy." And they said, "What movie's that from?" And I had no idea what movie it was from, and they said, "I'll give you a hint, John Lithgow," and I said, "Dawn of the Planet of the Apes?
The World According to Garp?"
And they're like, "Nope, it's from Buckaroo Banzai," and I was like, "Holy crap, I just watched that movie." So it was kind of a weird coincidence.
It's your favorite movie, too.
And every single person was like, "Why?"
It's not my favorite movie, but that doesn't seem like an iconic line, though, that I remember.
New Jersey Goldblum.
I know. It was just kind of a funny coincidence that came up.
Yeah.
So it's like how anytime we do a reviews it, that movie ends up being on
yes.
TV the
like
next week.
Like for free. It's on like Freeform or AMC, and it's just playing all day long. Not just like randomly. It's like there's a marathon of that movie because we go out and search for these movies, where they're streaming, where we can find it. And then it ends up popping up the next day on TV for free.
I remember there was a movie, I forget what it was. There was a movie back in like early 2000s.
Mm-hmm.
It was like James Gardner.
Space Cowboys?
Yes.
With Clint Eastwood and Tommy Lee Jones.
And
Donald Sutherland.
Yes. And it was playing on HBO.
Like nonstop.
24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Because at school we
saw that in the theaters.
So at school we get HBO and stuff like that. And it was like, okay, what's on HBO? Oh, it's Space Cowboys.
Space Cowboys.
For like 3 weeks straight, it was like, what's on HBO? Oh, it's Space Cowboys. Yeah. It's like, why would you do this? Why play it that much?
When they get a new movie, they play the hell out of it. That's what happens.
I know.
Yeah.
They licensed to show it 800 times and realized it wasn't popular. So they're like, let's just burn them off.
It actually is not a bad movie.
So, gentlemen, like I said, so I kind of went into a deep dive rabbit hole of all things Buckaroo Banzai. So I have a lot of information to share with
you.
I
can't wait.
Well, one of the primary sources, originally we had talked about we watched this on Hulu and Amazon. I picked up the, well, I had it in my library, the DVD copy, which on the full reviews I said came from Blockbuster. No, it actually came from a Hollywood Video, which is not a video store that was around us. So it means I was driving around and drove past a Hollywood Video going out of business, and I went in there and I bought it for like $5 or something like that.
Oh, because, $5 bin.
Yeah, so this was a little $5 bin. So,
are you thinking that this movie caused your brain to think about the $5 bin?
Quite possibly. This Monster Squad, I would not put it past.
Oh, my God.
So one of the things that came up during the full reviews is we were questioning the timeline of this movie.
Yes, I always question
things. So I found a source online. It was kind of a biography of Buckaroo. It was actually online, and it says, so Buckaroo Banzai was born in the 50s. So if this movie is supposed to take place in 84 when it came out, he's about 34, right. Yeah.
Or
134.
But the thing that confused us is because Lizardo, they showed his experiment in 1938. So I think that's the whole thing is when the alien John Worfen took over his body, he didn't age any further.
Yes.
So that's why Professor Hakita, he did age.
Not
but
very
Worfen
well.
Did.
Their makeup team was not good.
He didn't look like he had aged 45 years.
No, he didn't. That's true. So the other thing that kind of plays into that, again, which I briefly mentioned during the full reviews it, is that there was an alternative opening with Jamie Lee Curtis playing Buckaroo's mom. Now, gentlemen, I'm going to play this clip
Jamie
for
Lee
you.
Jamie Lee Curtis wouldn't have been that old.
She would have,
in 1938.
1950. So, well, you'll hear the clip. So Buckaroo is 5 years old in this clip.
Oh.
So this is this alternate opening, which I actually wish they would have used because I think it would have explained more and not made it seem as much of a sequel within a movie trilogy that did not exist if they played this, is a setup to Buckaroo Banzai that's almost like a found footage thing. Buckaroo filming on his homemade 8mm video when he is 5 years old. So this is a bit of a long clip, and I'm going to probably cut it a little bit, but this gives you some really good backstory to listen to. So let's take a listen to that.
Excellent.
The following unedited footage has been declassified by the Banzai Institute for Biomedical Engineering and Strategic Information.
Location is the American Southwest in the year 1954. Lem Buckaroo finds himself in the company of an eccentric group of particle physicists headed by Maverick Professor Toichi Akita. Seen here taking the camera from the precocious child and scooting him over to his parents. Dr. Masada Banzai, preeminent Japanese quantum theorist, and Dr. Sandra Banzai, Texas-born pioneer in negative mass propulsion. Enamored of the great American West, it is Dr. Banzai who insists that his son bear the unlikely given name of Buckaroo, a tribute to his adopted homeland. Thus, the boy celebrates his fifth birthday at a most deceptively peaceful time, as the advent of Soviet nuclear capability ushers in a dangerous new phase of the Cold War. Buckaroo seems content to enjoy what all children must require, a pair of loving parents. Professor Akita, encouraged by President Eisenhower, assembles a team of crack scientists at the Texas School of Mines. Their daring objective, to prove that man can indeed pass unharmed through solid matter. Dr. Banzai is joined in the cockpit of his highly theoretical and virtually homemade gravity catapult by the fastest man on Earth, British race car driver George Campbell. This is the secret ingredient, a radically redesigned oscillation overthruster. A sudden precipitous rise in cabin pressure signals the beginning of the end. The origins of this mysterious malfunction are later traced to a crude incendiary device planted under Dr. Banzai's seat by none other than the infamous Hanoi Shang.
So in this alternate opening, you have this 8mm footage narrated by Rawhide, Clancy Brown.
Yes.
And you see Jamie Lee Curtis plays Sandra Banzai, and she's, and they're all just trying
to. So she plays a Japanese lady?
No, she's American. His father is Japanese.
Oh, right. Okay.
And she's American, and they're setting up for this test And what ends up happening is, and again, Buckaroo Banzai was five in 1954.
So he was born in 1949.
1949. One of the most interesting things they bring up is that part of the reason why it went wrong is because there was a bomb planted by the infamous villain Hanoi Zan, who they get into a lot in the deleted stuff, who is the leader of the World Crime League. So this was the villain who was supposed to be of the sequel that they set up a lot in the stuff that they cut out.
And on top of that, it lends to a comic book a lot more.
Well, and in the world of this first movie, he is the villain of the comic books too, which we'll get into. So as I learned this stuff, I watched the special features on the DVD. There's like 4 hours of stuff. Now, this is, like, listen to the stuff.
Dear Lord.
So one of the things is they had a advertisement for the rocket car. And this was supposed to be a promo spot for the upcoming Buckaroo Banzai TV show, Buckaroo Banzai Ancient Secrets and New Mysteries. So that never came about.
When was that supposed to happen?
I feel like it was, like, within 10 years later or something like that. Yeah. Now, let's go to the deleted scenes. There were 14 deleted scenes. There were a lot of deleted scenes. Only three.
That's like another movie.
Yeah, another movie. And only three any importance, I'd say. I watched every single one of them. The eighth deleted scene is where they introduce the other Hong Kong Cavalier, Billy Travers. Now, this was the guy during that whole War of the Worlds scene that kept going, "It's statistically impossible." And he was looking up all the names. He's apparently the computer expert. And he just randomly kind of showed up and we didn't really meet him. And
right.
This is a bit of his intro.
Oh.
So let's meet Billy Travers.
Hi, fellas. Lay down some background vocals tonight.
I wish life was so simple, Billy. Hey, you remember that outfit the Justice Department was checking into last year?
Which one?
Yo-Yo Dyne Propulsion Systems.
Y-O-Y-O-D-Y-N-E, the big space and weapons high-tech consortium. Weighs on the delivery of the new country monitors.
Don't be so laconic, Billy. Buckaroo's orders. You gotta break into that data bank and attack the system. You up to it?
I'm a little short-handed tonight. My phone freaks are in town at the big ice cream social.
What does that mean?
So we'll help. Let's get cracking.
Who are you?
Sid's with New Jersey.
So Billy's another member of the Hong Kong Cavalry. I became, and I'll get into this a little later, but I became obsessed with the other members of the Hong Kong Cavaliers, like the full roster, which I found out a lot more information about at some point. But the other funny thing is while you're watching these deleted scenes, they show the regular clips of the movies, and then when they show the scenes that were cut out, they got all fuzzy. Like the camera work was all weird.
You know what?
Yeah.
I kind of remember that on deleted scenes on like VHS stuff. It's like they didn't post-process it properly.
Right.
And
like
then
nowadays
they just did it
you see the timestamp when it's like a deleted scene.
But it's still high
but
def.
But it still looks high def.
Yeah, yeah.
Now it's like the camera work is fuzzy and then they cut back to the movie and it's like clear again. So it was kind of weird every time they jumped to
that
these deleted
funky
scenes. Because they showed you where it fit within the movie, which is kind of interesting. Deleted scene number 9, John Emdale, the hologram that was giving the message. At one point, Perfect Tommy was like, "The Kremlin's going to mistake that as a declaration of war." And then the hologram goes, "That's right, Perfect Tommy." It responds back to him. So that was kind of, it was a little strange.
It's kind of fun, though.
It was kind of funny, but it was weird. Now, this next one was Penny inquiring about her dead twin sister. And this is where we hear a lot about that guy, Hanoi Shan. Or Hanoi Zen, whatever his name was.
Where is she?
She's dead. Murdered. A present from Hanoi Shan.
Hanoi Shan. The boss of the World Crime League, the guy in your comic books.
No. Not the guy in the comic books. There.
So that kind of clarifies, when we were watching the full movie, we were debating what happened to Buckaroo's ex-wife. And we said, oh, like, Rick, you just thought she left. And we said, you read somewhere that she actually died.
Yeah.
And this confirms that Hanoi Zan, he killed her. So that's what happened.
That makes me sad.
And he's the villain of the comic books.
She's fictional.
But he's actually real.
Wait,
they were really setting up.
He's real, but he's still fictional.
They're really setting up that sequel, like with these deleted things. All right, the next deleted scene when Penny was kidnapped by Dr. Lizardo, she said, I know who you are. You're Hanno Zahn. And Dr. Lizardo goes, who the hell is that? So she thinks he's this big villain of the whole series, and he's just a different villain. And then finally, the end of the movie, after Buckaroo does that spectacular parachute jump and he lands, Perfect Tommy goes, what are we going to do with these red Lectroids, these bad guys that we caught? And someone said, they are illegal aliens. Maybe we should call immigration. Oh. And Banzai says, and have the American taxpayers have to pay for them?
That's
no way, Jose.
That's topical.
We're going to send them back to space. Yeah, it is very relevant.
We're going to build a wall for space.
Now, here's some more things out of the special features. There's a section of character profiles. You can get complete character profiles on all the characters in this movie, complete with Hanoi Zahn. That's supposed to be the next movie. Now, let me read you some of his.
Does it have a picture of him?
It's got a big question mark. Oh. Like, they don't know what he looks like. And let me read his description here. Hanoi Zahn, a.k.a. the Scourge of Burma.
Oh.
Or the Spawn of Hell. Or the Face That Has No Face. Perhaps the most evil man, force, state of being the world has ever known. Zahn is the supreme commander of the World League of Death and the boss of the World Crime League. Operating out of his stronghold in Saba, the relic city of caves, hacked out of mountainous jungle, he surrounds himself with devious minds and assassins from every corner of the world. Murder is considered a discipline, and Zahn teaches those around him to, quote, walk in the hidden ways. Although it cannot be proven, it is known by Interpol that he was responsible for the death of Buckaroo Banzai's parents and has sworn to murder Banzai himself to end the blood feud that began with their Mongolian ancestors long ago.
You know, as you read that, I can see why the sequel didn't get a green light. Because
But it's just weird that they have a lot of backstory for this character,
but I,
that
like,
never
I'm,
comes to fruition.
I'm picturing them being like, okay, so, you know, we need a city built out of a mountain in a jungle.
Well, it's like a James Bond thing, kind of.
Yeah.
You
yes,
know?
But at the same time, are they going to give you the budget for that?
They also have a character profile for some guy named Lo Pep. And Lo Pep is apparently an assassin who works for Hanno Zahn. So when you're going through these profiles, there's profiles of two characters that aren't even in this movie, which is crazy.
Are these on the DVD?
On the DVD. These were all character profiles under the character profile section. So some more fun stuff. Under Banzai's personality profile, which is broken up by the musician, the scientist, the man, the adventurer. There's one other thing, because he's like lots of things. So if you click under him,
Did you mention the surgeon?
The Hong Kong Cavaliers, they, in quote, describe as they go and they come with the wind. And they include such members as Rawhide, which was in the movie, Reno, who was in the movie, the Swede, not in the movie, Perfect Tommy, in the movie, Big Norse, not in the movie, Red River Daddy, not in the movie, the Seminole Kid, not in the movie, and Pecos, who Jeff Goldblum in that conversation mentions is in Tibet at the time, just to name a few. So there's all these members of the Hong Kong Cavaliers that apparently can come and go whenever they want.
That's amazing.
Which is weird. Again, all these characters for this thing that's not based on another property.
That means there's so much thought process that went into actually...
thought process into this movie.
I thought this movie literally was just random. And all of this is proving to me that, no, there was actual thought that went into this entire property.
Right. So if that is not enough detail, this stuff is going to blow your mind even more. When I clicked on the Banzai Institute archive section, in there, not only do we get these full schematics of the tour bus and their headquarters, Complex 88.
Yeah.
We get a brochure of the Banzai Institute. We get several Hong Kong Cavalier CD covers and full track listings, which each CD has like 12 songs on it. And there's like 6 CDs. There's also a radio promo from the guy who was the publicist from this movie when he went on a radio show and did a 10-minute interview promoting the movie. And then finally, which is the most craziest thing, there are full pictures of every member of the Hong Kong Cavaliers' access badges into the headquarters. And this was only the iceberg of all the stuff that was on the DVD. This is only the stuff I had time to look at. There were much more stuff that I didn't dive deeper in.
Now, how much of this is like scanned props and whatnot, and how much of it is just things that they have created in the years since, like
even the
backstories. Like a lot of this could just be kind of the canon that has thus been created from the plans for the sequel.
So perhaps
and stuff.
When I bought it was like a re-release of the movie. Well, or something
I mean,
like
it's a DVD, so it obviously is coming years after the original movie, and it's after it had been a cult movie at that. So the cult following probably is what led to having so many special features, and that's probably where the content for a lot of these features are coming from.
It could be. But I just thought it was interesting how much thought went into this movie. It was interesting.
I'm still not convinced that much thought went into the actual movie.
But since then, like, a lot of thought has gone
in. Yes, because again, there is a wide following of this movie that people are really into this movie.
I
sent you guys that YouTube clip of that, whoever that guy was, saying that Buckaroo Banzai was the most important superhero of our time. And he just kept going, which is his clip when he talks to Penny and goes, hey, everybody, don't be mean. Don't be mean, because wherever you go, there you are.
Is that an original quote from him, or is it a larger
saying? I have no idea. The first time I ever heard it was from the Brady Bunch movie.
Oh.
When Gary Cole was playing Mr. Brady. So there you go, guys. There's lots of fun. Do we even bother? Should I even go into some more fun facts
about
this movie?
Because I enjoy this movie.
Well, you have something up, Rick. Why don't you start looking at it a little bit as well? There's also a video game tie-in from 1985.
Oh.
Some of the dialogue used in the jet car sequence was taken directly from Mission Control scene. They literally just copied and pasted the...
They just said, this is like during the moon landing? So we had mentioned this up before, so my favorite scene of the movie when they're doing the little walk at the end during the... Which is...
Oh, that's what you were singing earlier.
Yeah,
I thought you were singing the Linus and Lucy.
Yeah, no, I was singing that. We mentioned to keep the time, they were walking to Uptown Girl. That scene that we kept describing, that's the kind of the place where they film a lot of movies in Los Angeles. That's the Los Angeles Aqueduct. I think we called it like the ravine or something
that. Something like
that. Or like T2 and Grease.
Yeah.
You know, it's the Los Angeles Aqueduct.
In 1984... Gene Siskel said just before the film's release that this film will attain cult status.
Wow. He's visionary.
Yeah.
He knew what's going on.
Yep.
The US DVD release includes a caption portion titled Pinky Carruthers Unknown Facts, which actually adds to the storyline and character development of the film. Now, on my DVD copy, I noticed I could put on audio commentary of the Pinky Carruthers facts.
Oh.
Now, Pinky Carruthers, if you did not realize, is the guy with the backwards hat that is the auxiliary member of the Hong Kong Cavaliers.
Yes.
I'll take your word for it.
Yeah, okay.
I don't remember there being someone with the backwards hat.
Yeah.
So.
In the original script, this goes into what we were just talking about. Buckaroo was supposed to have an arch enemy named Hanno Zan, who was never seen but referenced to by Buckaroo and the other characters. All scenes containing dialogue regarding Zan were deleted from the film's theatrical release, but are now available on DVD. Zan was supposed to be the mysterious head of a crime syndicate called the World Crime League, and also the man who murdered Buckaroo's parents and wife, Peggy. That's everything that we just played before from the deleted stuff.
Oh.
That's exactly with it. And one of the things which became well apparent as we watched this movie is that the overall concept in many of the names in this movie were taken from like Doc Savage pulp magazines of the 30s and 40s. This is really the intent of the movie. It was like a pulp character. That's what they were going off. That's what they were inspired by with this movie, is that all the pulp magazines from the 30s and 40s. So, hey, Rick, listen to this one.
Okay.
You'll get a kick out of this. The oscillation overthruster device reappeared, but it was called the Spectral Analyzer on Star Trek The Next Generation. Season 2, Episode 15.
Yeah, I just
watched
that.
You saw the oscillation overthruster?
Actually, I saw the clip on YouTube.
Okay.
Oh.
I don't sit and watch Star Trek all the time.
Oh my god, we need to find this.
I have located some footage of the video game, which is...
We'll have to take a look.
Yes.
It probably looks like that promo for the jet car. It's very similar. This is really weird. John Lithgow appeared as Dr. Lizardo on Saturday Night Live.
I do
when
remember
he opened
that.
And when he hosted.
I remember seeing it.
Oh, one of the things I did find interesting, because they have a quick fact about Jeff Goldblum, is they said that his character, New Jersey, his grandfather was in old Western silent movies like Gene Autry. So he was wearing his grandfather's clothes. That's why he wore, like, those old-timey cowboy outfits.
Those clothes look pretty new. Why is he wearing them after doing surgery?
It's what he feels comfortable in, Rod. Give him a break.
He's New Jersey. It's Jeff Goldblum. If Jeff Goldblum did that now,
I'd be like,
wouldn't
I'm good.
It.
If Jeff Goldblum did it, that's fine. If New Jersey does it, that's weird.
Yeah, exactly.
In the scene where Reno refers to Orson Welles as the guy from the old wine commercials, by the way, that was Billy Travers that said that, not Reno. This is a reference to Welles' popular television commercials in the 70s for the Paul Mason Winery, now known as Mountain Winery, where he used the slogan, "We will sell no wine before it's time."
That's a Vincent Price.
that's what I can do. In the early 80s, Welles was fired from the advertising campaign after stating on a U.S. talk show that he never drank the company's wine.
Yeah, but so many people do that now.
Yeah, it's true, yeah. The latitude and longitude recited by the technicians during the alignment of the oscillation overthruster are the coordinates for Cape Canaveral, Florida.
That's fun.
Yeah.
Oscillation overthruster would work as a band name.
I like that. Or a song.
I've got my oscillation overthruster
in my pants.
Oh, you had to make it dirty.
During the jet car test, the computer screen that has the graphics shows three different words: signed, sealed, and delivered. Speaking of weird computer things, there is one point where John, this was in the deleted scenes, Lizardo is torturing Banzai to get him to help him out with the overthruster.
Yeah.
And he types in a password and the computer says, "No, that didn't work either." That's the response to him putting in the password.
That's pretty good.
Not like invalid or incorrect. It's like, "Nope, that didn't work either."
So with some other weird computer things.
Yeah.
So I have some footage here of the Buckaroo Banzai game that appears to be from the Apple II.
Oh, okay. So it was a computer game.
Yes. And it is very rudimentary.
Let me see.
So
it looks like Maniac Mansion.
Yeah. So what we have
King's Quest.
It looks like just a bed in the middle of a hallway.
So it's text-based.
It is a text-based game. It says, "Hit return, Buckaroo Banzai, I want you to..."
And then
W. Okay, I go west. Now we're outside. There's the yo-yo dime.
It's really close.
I see
to
exits
the
to the north, south, east, and west.
These
Buckaroo
were
Banzai.
Amazing games.
I want you to enter station. Okay.
I really like these games at the
I'm
time.
In a small gas too. Station. I see a gas pump, a cashier's booth. I want you to enter booth.
It makes me think of the game at the
I'm
beginning
of I'm in cashier's
of Big.
Booth. I see here a control console, a trash pile. Buckaroo Banzai, I want you to examine trash.
Wait,
okay, I see
like,
something.
We're not seeing any characters. We're just seeing settings.
Buckaroo Banzai, I want you to get battery. Buckaroo Banzai, I want you to examine battery.
I want to think...
I see there's no water in the battery.
I want to pretend this is Dr. Nikita telling Banzai what to do.
This is just a weird, primarily text-based game. Yeah. At one point, they're digging a hole, and there is kind of like a little animation there.
That's
fun. Oh,
who
is that?
Buckaroo Banzai, I want you to dig. Okay.
That's Buckaroo Banzai?
That was Buckaroo Banzai. Oh, he made two holes.
That's funny. Well, there you go. Now we know the game.
And I have the volume all turned up, so it clearly had no sound.
I think you could do it now as like a massive MMO.
Like an open world game?
Yeah.
Or like a...
The Warcrafts?
No, the one that like the Walking
Fortnite.
Dead game. Or the new...
The Telltale?
The Telltale game.
Yeah,
games.
They, I think they shut down.
Oh, okay. Well,
see,
they could have done it like that.
I was
that.
Along the lines of the Warcraft, because you could have this entire Banzai universe.
Yes. Like, what's that one with Commander Shepard there? That Is game it? That everyone loves that
oh.
never played.
Oh, Snood. Does that still exist?
Mass Effect.
Have you heard of Snood, though?
I've heard of Snood. I know Snood. That's not
What was your favorite anymore. Snood, Rick?
Was there actual... I mean, they were different. The blue one?
I liked the blue one, too.
Is that the one where you shot things? Like,
yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Snood.
Why haven't we gotten the Snood movie yet?
We should get this. We're getting a Playmobil movie next year, so...
We are.
Yeah, oh, yeah. So the song that Buckaroo kind of brings things down when he sings to Penny, it's called "Since I Don't Have You," released in 1958 by the Skyliners. The song became their greatest hit and remains an all-time doo-wop classic.
Ah. Speaking of songs, The Heat Is On
was
originally recorded
earlier
for Beverly Hills Cop.
Oh, I said an Eddie Murphy. I said that.
So there you go.
You know what? I really think they need to bring another Beverly Hills Cop movie back and use all of the same, like, 80s music.
We always love original casting, so offered the part of Perfect Tommy, Michael Madsen.
Oh, really?
Okay.
But he turned it down because he had scheduling conflicts with The Natural.
We brought up this in the main episode about Dan Hedaya playing Gomez. His name in the movie is John Gomez.
Oh, yeah. He plays John Gomez, but nothing to do with Gomez Adams.
Well, I mean, Gomez and Gomez.
Was Dan Hedaya in Adams Family? I feel like he was in the Adams Family movie.
Was he?
I thought so.
I thought he played...
Wasn't he part of that group that were, having Fester pretend to be Fester, but
yeah,
really
he played
Fester?
In the movie with Gomez.
Yeah.
It's Gomez and Gomez. There we go. It could have been like a buddy cop comedy.
Oh.
John Gomez about? And Gomez Adams.
Dan Hedaya.
Gomez and Gomez.
At Attorneys
with,
at Law.
With Beverly Hills Cop 80s music playing in the background. No? You don't like this?
I love it.
We already got funding for it.
Two people that were considered to play Buckaroo Banzai. Oh, my God.
Tom Hanks.
You got it.
Who else in the 80s? Hold on. Tom Hanks and Mel Gibson.
Michael Keaton.
Oh, all right.
I could see Michael Keaton. Oh, my God. Yeah, Michael, I can't see Tom Hanks.
No. Michael Keaton.
But Michael Keaton would have been phenomenal.
Oh, he would have been really good in this.
Yep.
And actually, I would have believed it more than Peter Weller.
Oh, Brian, to your question before, another Star Trek connection. The quote, "No matter where you go, there you are," appears on the dedication plaque on the USS Excelsior in Star Trek.
I've heard that I read someone say that it might be a Confucious quote, too.
Yeah, I think
it's just one of those things that has been...
Yeah, it's just...
It's gone around, right?
Like, who knows if it's an actual Confucius quote or just one of those quotes that, through time, got attributed?
I believe that it is, so it must be true. The internet says it.
So one of the things you brought up on the main episode, Brian, which I recall as well, so... Both Peter Weller and John Lithgow appeared in Dexter.
Yes.
Lithgow played the Trinity Killer in season 4.
Spoiler alert.
And Weller played a corrupt cop in season 5.
Oh, so two separate seasons.
Yeah.
An update, Dan Hedaya was in the Addams Family.
That's what I thought, yeah.
He was also in some follow-ups to a movie that we covered here on the podcast.
Oh.
He was in another Midnight Run and
there was
Midnight
a sequel?
Run Around.
There was two sequels?
There were two sequels?
So these were apparently TV movies starring Christopher McDonald as Jack Walsh.
Christopher like the singer? Christopher McDonald? Wait, no, what's
that's
it?
Michael McDonald.
Michael McDonald.
Shooter McGavin.
What a fool believes.
Oh, yes, Shooter McGavin. That would be much better. You know what?
These
I'm,
are
changing,
from
I'm changing my Gomez to Gomez to have Michael McDonald singing
well, the,
80s
it's
music.
It's funny you bring that up, Rick, because the last trivia fact I have is in the film, Dan Hedaya plays a character named John Gomez. 7 years later, he would appear in another film with a character named Gomez, The Addams Family, in 1991. So full circle.
That's what I'm saying. It's already written a buddy cop comedy right there.
All right, so fun facts about The Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai across the
facts.
So many fun facts you weren't even looking for. There
fun
you go.
Fun facts.
Well, let's move on, gentlemen, because we have a few more other things to talk about. So one of the things which we could touch upon really quick because at the time of the full movie reviews at Rick, had already covered this point.
Matt Clark.
6 degrees of separation.
I did one.
Last movie we did, which was Return to Oz, in the current movie, Buckaroo Banzai, and you made a direct connection.
I did. Matt Clark.
And Matt Clark
was
who in each movie?
Mel Clark from Angels in the Outfield.
No.
Yeah, Mel Clark. Tony Danza.
Hey,
Mona.
No, Matt Clark was Uncle Henry.
Uncle Henry in Return to Oz.
In Return to Oz, and he was the Secretary of State in...
The Weasley's Secretary of Defense?
Defense, sorry.
In this movie.
In this movie. And
that's
also,
pretty crazy.
He also plays the bartender in Back to the Future 3.
Well, whenever we get to that, you'll know.
I'm going
to
link...
That'll be the next movie.
You know what? We should
We're just going to work through his knowledge.
We're probably going to... From now on, it's going to be 6 degrees of Matt Clark. We have to connect back to him.
Well, gentlemen, I think at this point, which is something we actually neglected at the last mini, is we are rather overdue on a few stack rankings.
Well, yeah, we deferred it last time.
Well, we deferred Return to Oz and Buckaroo Banzai. So, Rick, if you would do the honors, Rick, I will give you the power of the stack ranking.
Okay. So
Return to Oz, you knew where you wanted this to go. I believe we said we're going to start around Hocus Pocus.
Okay, that makes sense. I wanted to go to Hocus Pocus, and that, like you said, was 59. So above Hocus Pocus is The Cutting Edge.
Oh, topic.
Ooh.
Or below it is Free Willy.
I like Return to Oz better than Hocus Pocus.
But I like almost Free Willy better than Return to Oz. We're in a really fighting stage
this
right now.
This is going to be tough.
It is a tough one.
All right, I'll give you...
Even with our time to reflect on
here's
it.
Here's the problem. I'll give you Cutting Edge, but the next movie is Monster Squad.
Ooh. That's a tough go between. Just for argument's sake, what's above Monster Squad?
Batman Forever.
Oh, okay. I think originally I got outvoted. I probably would have given Monster Squad higher.
Well,
so,
that's why I think this is worse than Monster Squad. Return to Oz.
I would probably watch Return to Oz before Monster Squad, but I'm willing to defer on that.
Because, well,
let
above
me ask
it,
you this. What's above Batman Forever?
Footloose.
Then Blank Check, which is a great movie.
I beg to differ, but it's an all right movie. I don't mind it. I like Million Bucks.
It's wonderful.
I definitely watch Return to Oz before Blank Check.
Really?
I like Return to Oz.
But so then you get up to The Phantom, and I'd rather watch The Phantom.
But I don't know if I could fight against Monster Squad. I really like Monster Squad.
Well, that's what I'm
saying. They're about in the same boat.
Exactly.
To me.
So yeah. I said Hocus Pocus, which is 59. Literally, we're stuck at like.
Well,
I mean,
let's go below Hocus Pocus for a second, or above if we're going in terms of top numbers.
Okay.
So after Hocus Pocus, there's Free Willy, there's Judge Dredd, Neverending Story.
Well, it's got to be Neverending Story.
I would honestly watch Judge Dredd over Return to Oz.
So I would do Return to Oz.
But I might put Return to Oz after Free Willy, between Free Willy and Judge Dredd.
So 61?
I would put it before Free Willy.
But again, that's 59. Man, I nailed the Hocus Pocus.
Well, you guys can all vote me here, but I'd put
all right,
it before
all right, let's say,
Free Willy.
All right, here we go. So you're saying before Free Willy, so it takes place of Hocus Pocus at 59.
It
takes place. Yeah.
I got to put Return to Oz above Hocus Pocus. I'd watch Return to Oz all the live long day before.
Yeah, but I would probably not. I would actually probably watch Hocus Pocus.
I'd rather watch Return to Oz.
I was not here for the full reason of Hocus Pocus, but I would probably watch it. Because here's the thing I have. Hocus Pocus, I can watch with the kids. Return to Oz would just absolutely freak them out.
But that's why I like it, because it's so much darker.
Hocus Pocus
is so much cheesier.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But Return to Oz doesn't have Thackeray Binks.
Yeah, which is a good thing.
I would put it just under
Hocus. Return to Oz under Monster Squad. That's what I'm saying.
So I'm saying it's under Hocus Pocus.
Brian?
So
it would take
it
place
Monster
as 60.
Squad.
I want it under Monster Squad.
Want it under Hocus Pocus.
Yeah.
I would say, why don't we compromise and put it
under Cutting Edge.
Under Cutting Edge, above Hocus Pocus.
Yes.
So it's
I
new,
will do that.
It's a new 59.
I like that. We go with that.
Boom.
Eric?
I said Hocus Pocus at 59. It's the new 59.
Boom. The new normal. This is going to be even more interesting, I think. We'll see.
Okay.
Buckaroo Banzai.
Now,
where are we going? I gotta go higher. Let's jump up higher.
I feel like it's higher.
I don't think I can go much higher.
Oh, so
I'm not saying much higher. I'm just saying higher than that range we were just talking about.
So if I'm gonna think of something kind of cult classic-ish that we have, Dark Crystal is kind of something. UHF, Hudson Hawk is not a cult classic, but it's...
Where's Hudson Hawk at?
Hudson Hawk is at 48
now.
So
it's above Hudson Hawk.
Yeah. But so Dark Crystal is 43, Teen Wolf 42, UHF 41. Then we get to Twister.
Yeah, Twister's above it.
That's what I think.
Twister above this movie.
I think so.
UHF? I got to put UHF above this.
I agree with you. Yeah. I think as much as UHF is, it's a funky movie, I would
but
still.
It's so fun. It's so fun.
Yeah, I would probably
feel like
watch
that.
That
movie influenced my life a lot more than.
Yeah, than this?
Yeah.
I don't know. UHF, Teen Wolf, Dark Crystal, Major League, Jingle All the Way, Time Cop, Spawn, Hudson Hawk.
Jingle All the Way is definitely better.
I think Major League's better
what
too.
What if we
so.
Say above Hudson Hawk, below Spawn?
I think if you were to put it anywhere, it would
Wait,
probably
we have
be
Hudson
the,
Hawk
no,
above
Jingle All the Way.
All the Way
is Jingle All the Way is at 45 currently.
That's what I'm saying. Put it above Hudson Hawk.
All right, just because of Jeff Goldblum.
I put it right over Hudson Hawk.
Time Cop and Spawn ahead of it. Yeah, but
Time
see,
Cop
I think
and Spawn. I could debate this with Time Cop and Spawn.
Spawn is
Spawn. So we should put it probably above Hudson Hawk.
I've said that 15 times.
So, you know, I think, Rick, between me and you, I think we should put it at number 48. So it'll take Hudson Hawk's spot on
yeah.
the list.
Yeah, okay.
That, push that one down.
Like
that,
I've said 87 times.
That kind of makes sense.
That's what I've said the whole time.
But you know what?
I said, just put it above Hudson Hawk.
Brian, Jingle All the Way is a better movie. So
it's a much better movie.
And I like
So we should make sure that that's, you know, earlier in the list.
Am I even right. here right now?
So, yeah, 48B.
Wouldn't 48B be 49?
Oh, all right.
Spawn,
oh, no.
Adventures
okay.
of Buckaroo Banzai, Hudson Hawk. All right, I'm going to go through all the fun facts again. Deleted scene number one.
Well, maybe we should just right. start at the top
Getting
of the list.
Getting ready backstage at the rock show.
Number 48, taking place of Hudson Hawk, is Buckaroo Banzai.
Yay! Boop-a-boop-boop-boop-boop-boop.
Go away, Charlie Brown.
All right, gentlemen, so we don't have a lot of time left, so let's... oh, where have these actors gone? Oh, where could they be?
Probably not famous anymore.
All right,
yes,
Rick, so...
I'm ready.
Let's go with some of the Hong Kong Cavaliers.
Done deal.
Give me Reno. Reno, Nevada.
All right.
As they say out
Pepe.
There... Nevada.
Pepe Serna, the ever-reliable Mexican-American actor.
Oh, he's
Pepe
got a good
Serna,
profile picture.
Has appeared in more than 100 feature films and 300 television shows.
Wow, holy moly.
But his most recognized performance for several motion pictures, including Scarface, Silverado, The Rookie, and
Brendan Fraser?
And American Me with Edward James Olmos.
Eddie Jimmy Olmos.
So he has been in a ton of movies. His latest one is Flavor of Life.
Not Flavor of Love, but Flavor
no,
of Life.
No, Flavor.
It's a TV show.
Flavor of Life. And then, let's see, his last big movie, because there's a lot of credits here.
Is he still acting today?
Oh, yeah. A lot of movies.
Wow.
Every year he's doing something.
Good for him. Reno is the biggest little city.
He was a voice of Justice League.
Oh, nice.
He
what would character?
A voice of Justice League.
Shiffit. Shiffiot.
Played Richard Schiff.
He played shit it.
Pretty much. We're going to go with that.
He was the dirtiest character.
Shiflet.
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 It's like a chiclet.
That's what I was thinking, too.
It's a tiny, chewable Richard Schiff.
Oh, he played the role of Mr. Sanchez in the show The PJs. Do you remember that show?
Oh, that Eddie Murphy claymation show?
Yeah, it was crazy.
Eddie Murphy keeps popping up during this episode.
Oh, my God.
Anything else he did with Eddie Murphy? Was he in Raw?
He was on Diagnosis Murder.
Oh, he was in Sliders.
He was Mr. Ortiz in A Million to One.
All right, so that's Reno, Nevada. Another person I'm interested in is, well, we talked a little bit about him during the full reviews at that. I remembered him, the one other role I remembered him when it was in The Heavenly Kid, but Perfect Tommy.
Lewis Smith.
Lewis Smith, yes.
I'll read his amazing.
Let's hear it.
He was born August 1st, 1956, in Chattanooga, Tennessee, as Lewis Colley Smith. He is an actor and director known for The Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai Across the Eighth Dimension, Wyatt Earp, and The Man Who Fell to Earth.
Oh, yeah, he was in the Kevin Costner Wyatt Earp movie.
His latest acting credit will be Desert Dick.
What? What is that?
That is a two hotshot detectives complete against a wannabe to solve a case of abduction. The case winds up with many twists and turns.
Oh, it also has Mike Starr.
Oh, he's in everything.
And Brian Wilson.
Brian Wilson from the Beach Boys?
No, a different one. Okay. Not the pitcher either. Lewis Smith was also in Django Unchained.
He was?
He was Jingle Bells Cody.
Was that one of the guys who was hunting the whole time? I don't know. I gotta watch that movie again.
He was in Diagnosis Murder as well.
Everyone's in
the
official
show
murder.
Of... He played young hot guy in Toothless on The Wonderful World of Disney, which was the Kirstie Alley Tooth Fairy movie that also had our good buddy, Ross Malinger.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Corey Feldman.
Oh, no. Ross
he
Malinger
was also
from Sudden Death.
In Booker.
Oh, the spinoff of 21 Jump Street, yes. Richard Grieco.
Yes.
He was on great. Melrose Place.
I could see that, yeah.
And Murder, She Wrote. He played Zidzik in Diary of a Hitman. He was on the Beauty and the Beast TV show.
So what was he doing around? So he had Buckaroo Banzai and the Heavenly Kid, like, in the 80s. So, like,
and he
was...
also did North and South.
That was the big Civil War thing, right? All right, is there anyone else we're interested in from this movie? I mean, it's surprising how many actors were really well-known.
What has Jeff Goldblum done?
No, not Jeff Goldblum.
I mean, to be fair.
Peter Weller? Let's read off the cast list, Rick.
Buckaroo Banzai.
No, keep going.
Was Peter Weller. John Lithgow played Okay. Ellen Barkin.
Keep going.
Okay. Jeff Goldblum.
Keep going.
John Bigbute.
Keep going.
Rosalind Cash played John Emdell. Robert Ito played Professor Nikita.
All right.
So, his last acting credit, he was in Mater's Tall Tales, and he played Ito-san.
Mater's Tall Tales?
I've seen some of those.
Okay. Yeah.
He did a voice of Avatar, The Last Airbender. He played Sun Warrior Chief. A lot of voice credits. We're going through. Oh, Jackie Chan Adventures.
The animated one?
Yeah. He was in Star Trek Voyager as John Kim. The Wild Thornberries. The Immortal with Lorenzo Lamas.
I am immortal. Was it Takeoff of the Highlander?
An immortal warrior hunts down demons in a modern day world.
Inside me, blood of kings.
He was in Diagnosis Murder. He played Robert Ito.
That is awesome.
So he played himself in Diagnosis Murder.
He's like, hello, I'm here and I have spleen pain.
Well, it turns out that spleen pain is murder.
Ah, he played...
You've been murdered.
He played Mr. Wu in Dr. Quinn, Medicine Woman.
He also had spleen pain.
He had spleen pain.
Chicago Hope. Oh, he played the voice. He was the Mandarin in the Iron Man 1995 series.
The cartoon?
Yes.
Oh. I've seen that. The one that Stan Lee would host at the beginning and go, hello,
Excelsior.
Excelsior.
Yes.
Hello, true believers.
Hello, true believers. Yeah. It's me, Stan the Man Lee.
He did a voice in Johnny Quest. Mark, he was Dr. Chen in Captain Planet and the Planeteers.
Oh, we're the Planeteers. You can be one too. Because saving our planet is the thing to do.
I never got into Captain Planet.
Oh, Captain Planet.
And as you're
planet,
doing this, I see why I didn't get
the
into
hero.
It.
Gonna take pollution down to zero. Gonna help.
See, my version of Captain Planet was I had a
you saw the clip of Don Cheadle.
No, I had a book, like a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles book that was like all
recycle.
About. It was all about like recycling and stuff, and it taught me what greenhouse gases were.
Oh, because they're
like,
green.
I was like, I don't need Captain Planet. I've got my Ninja Turtle book.
You got the Ninja Turtles.
I believe I got it at Stop and Shop.
So, John, I think that's pretty good for where have these actors gone? Any kind of further thoughts about Buckaroo Banzai, ranking things, saving the environment, whatsoever?
Did you realize that Buckaroo Banzai's father was the Shredder?
And you just brought up Ninja Turtles! Full circle.
And on that note,
thanks, Cinemaniacs, for listening to this episode of the $5 Bin Podcast. I'm Mark, and for Rick and Brian, just remember, you can always paint the grass green. And keep the earth green. Good night.
Goodbye.
All right, Hong Kong Cavaliers, this is your leader, Buckaroo Banzai. I'm going to take roll call now as we get on the bus. Rawhide, you here?
I'm here.
Reno?
Present.
The Swede?
Yay!
Perfect Tommy?
Of course I am here, I am perfect.
Big Norse?
Hello, I am Norse god of big...
Red River Daddy?
Hey, I'm here, daddies.
The Seminole Kid? Pecos, are you back?
Yeehaw.
And we got some new members of the Underwear Snitcher.
Yes, I'm here. And you're wearing boxer briefs that have a hole in the crotch.
Some guy named Howard.
Hello.
Who else we got here? Bobby?
Oh, Bobby. All right. I thought Bobby was supposed to be here.
Isn't that Mrs. Chip?
No, I'm here too. I'm driving the bus. Don't pay attention to me.
Guys.
Who are you?
Howard.
Howard, what is your role in our squad here?
I sing backup vocals.
Wow, no wonder why we don't get great turn-ins at our band meetings.
Howard, can you sing The Heat Is On?
Can you sing The Heat Is On?
The Heat Is On, TV 38.
That's the movie loft. That's where our movie will end up. Bye, everybody.
Goodbye.
Thanks, Cinemaniacs, for listening to this mini-episode of the $5 Bin Podcast. And join us next time for our next full movie reviews it. You can find us on the social interwebs. Tweet us at the number $5 bin POD, like us on Facebook, or email us at the $5bin.podcast@gmail.com. Download and subscribe to all our episodes on iTunes, and when you do, hey, why not leave a nice rating and review? Helps others to find the podcast as well. Why, thank ya! For information about Brian and my improv organization, Natick Improv, and upcoming workshops and performances, you can visit NaticImprov.com or like Natick Improv on Facebook. A big thanks once again to Jenny Weech and Jeff Kimball for the $5 Bin theme song. And until next time, Cinemaniacs, hasta la vista, baby cavaliers, baby leers.